Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories, making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us today. We are joined today by the National Teen Voices Author Tour, three talented novelists who are currently touring the States to discuss the exciting world of young adult literature. They're visiting libraries, schools, bookstores, and literally speaking to thousands of young readers and aspiring writers about their own work and about the myriad of emotions and dilemmas that teens face on a daily basis. I'd like to welcome my three guests today. I'm going to bring them on and have them just tell you a little bit about their own books themselves throughout the course of the hour today. So let me welcome Amber Kaiser, Lisa Shanahan, and Jake Weisner to the show. Welcome all.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, and you guys are touring right now around the country. And this is quite an unusual thing for Random House to put together a tour like this. So it must have an awful lot of faith in your books. And one of the things I wanted to start out by discussing is how much literature has changed since I was a teenager. I couldn't believe some of the content in here. Not that I'm saying that's bad. It's just so different to the kind of books that I was reading or that were published for me to read at that age. So who wants to kick off and tell us what the young adult market's about today?
Well, I'll be happy to jump in there and start. And Jake and Lisa, you want to jump in after me? The market itself has grown and changed so widely, and I think one of the things adults picking them up are shocked by, and like you said, the content. I think young adult books have really become much more teen voice friendly. They really deal with the thing, very authentic characters, very real characters, and things that the teens are very much interested in, not necessarily the things parents would like their kids to be reading.
Right, and my memories of from when I was a teenager was that teenagers were supposed to be starting to read the more accessible classics, so books like To Kill a Mockingbird and Catcher in the Rye and Lord of the Flies. And while young adult literature existed at the time, it certainly was not as big as it is today. I think that there was a general recognition that we needed books that were not both necessarily for teens and adults, but books that spoke very, very specifically to teenagers and their issues with teenage protagonists.
Right.
And so there's much more of a market for that today.
My view probably is that there were some groundbreakers like Judy Blume and, you know, some other, you know, great young adult writers who paved the way for the types of books that, you know, are read by teenagers today. And certainly I think, you know, books for young adult fiction in the main tend to deal with the coming of age and the intensity of the teenage experience, and that's reflected in a variety of genres.
Mm. Right. And you certainly don't talk about anything that I haven't heard my nieces and nephews talk about. And going back to when I was that age, I remember that my mother... my mother gave me Harold Robbins' The Carpetbaggers to read when I was 11 because I'd read all the kids' books and was fed up with them. So this is not as bad as that for sure. But it's good to see that there's a market out there now for the teenage group. What specific age are we looking at, Lisa, for the teenage group?
Well, my book's probably just a little bit younger than I think Jake and Amber's. When people have been speaking to me about, you know, the type of readers that my book would be suited for, they're saying, you know, 11 to 15-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's my book was originally published in Australia and then was picked up by Random House and published in the States. And that's definitely, you know, the type of readers that I've met who've been, you know, reading the book.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about your book and then we'll go round the table.
Okay. My book is called The Sweet, Terrible, Glorious Year I Truly Completely Lost It. And it's a story about 14-year-old Gemma Stone, who is this intensely lovable girl who's trying to survive her sister's outrageous, tacky wedding, her first big crush on a boy, her appearance in the school play, and her very embarrassing family. And she's also, I guess, trying to survive the experience of life, you know, in that she's actually found that life swings so drastically from joy to agony, from agony to joy, that she doesn't really know how to cope with it. And it's all about how she comes to terms with her emotions in that very remarkable 14th year that she has in her family.
Okay. And before this, you've written several books, but this is your first teen book, right?
That's exactly right. I've written picture books and some chapter novels.
Okay. Now, Jake, I know that you're a new novelist.
Yeah.
You teach 8th grade English and history.
That's correct.
In New York.
Yeah.
And my hat goes off to you. tell us a little bit about your book.
Right. Teaching 8th grade, I kind of was inspired to write the kind of book that I felt like my students were always asking me for,
which meant
something funny, something real, and something, to be honest, just a little bit racy. I think that young adults like to read about characters who are just a little bit older than they are. So my book is the story of Shakespeare Shapiro, who is a high school senior who believes his life was doomed from the moment his parents named him. And in the book, he's writing his memoir of his life. All the seniors in his class have to write a memoir. And the book alternates between chapters of his memoir and months of his senior year. And he's using the memoir as a way of framing his life as a series of humiliations. He's kind of cast himself as something of a victim in his life story. And through the process of writing and trying to make sense of his life, he comes to recognize and take responsibility for kind of his own well-being and his own happiness.
Okay. I have to say, it's a very funny book. What age group are you looking at on this?
Yeah, I think that it's appropriate maybe beginning at about age 12. I have noticed that a lot of adults have read the book and really liked it because they've said that it's kind of a window for them into the minds of their teenage children.
But I would say
that anywhere from about ages 12 to 16 is probably the real target audience. So, even my wife's grandmother has read it and enjoyed it.
Oh, really? Interesting. Yeah. And Amber, how about
yes.
you? I know you live close to Seattle.
I do. I live on Whidbey Island, actually.
There you go. And what about your book? Tell us a little bit about your protagonist and what
right.
she gets it to.
Well, the title is One Butt Cheek at a Time, and it starts the series of Gert Garibaldi's Rants and Raves. And Gert is this 15-year-old first semester of her sophomore year of high school, and she's doing all of those wonderful universal American things like dating and driver's ed and taking the PSAT and falling in love with the wrong boy and falling in love with the right boy. And the title goes to her philosophy of life, which is to take things one butt cheek at a time. So that's how she puts on her jeans. That's how she breaks down the big, overwhelming experience that can be high school and being a teenager. And she just tries to take it as it comes. So
okay. And I know, is this your first book too, is that correct?
Yes, this is my first published book.
And I read in there a very nice acknowledgement to your mother, where you said she believed in you and knew this could be possible even when you didn't.
Right.
So I'm assuming from that this was not an easy process for you all the way through.
Well, actually, that goes to the fact that my freshman year of college, I developed a rare nerve disorder called reflex sympathetic dystrophy syndrome that affects both of my legs. And it means that I have to live outside of the box. My legs don't always work, but they always hurt, and there's a myriad of funky symptoms that go along with it. So the acknowledgement was not so much about the book, but just getting me through the last 11 years of my life has been very difficult and challenging in many ways, and my mother has been amazing. So,
mm-hmm. Now, you guys are all going around together doing this tour to schools and libraries and bookstores. Why don't we start off with Jake and tell us what kind of feedback you're getting from the young adult market?
It's been very interesting for me. I mean, because I teach 8th grade, I kind of had a sense of what it would be like to go in and present in the schools. But we've been getting excellent feedback in the schools because I think that, the kids that we're reading for and talking to, I think really appreciate and are refreshed by kind of the honesty and the content that we're dealing with. So when we read, there's often a lot of laughter, and we really enjoy getting to know the kids and stuff. So I think that there's this sense of, we come in and we're just kind of walking around and saying hi to them. And I think we come across as very normal people to them.
I would hope so.
Yeah, yeah. and in the bookstores, it's been great, too, because, again, these bookstores have, you know, obviously been sent advanced copies of our books. So we come in and we're able to talk with them about the books. And, you know, they've read the books and they've promoted it around. And it's also been, for us, it's really been wonderful because, you know, with three of us together, I mean, certainly I've really, really enjoyed being able to play off the other two writers. And, you know, there are things that are very similar about our writing styles and about kind of our views of young adult literature. And then oftentimes we have different perspectives and stuff. And it's just been a really interesting experience for me, too, to be able to travel with these other writers.
Mm. What about you, Lisa? Are you, I know you're Australian. Do you live in Australia right now?
Yes, no, I do. I live in Sydney, in a southern suburb down there. And so this is my first experience of being in the United States.
Well, welcome, and how do you like it?
Oh, it's amazing. I was telling Amber last night, I just cannot get over just the warmth of people in this country.
Uh-huh.
And I was saying sometimes I think, you know, we might in Australia come across as being a little bit indifferent in our service, but certainly here it's just, you just feel like you're a member of people's family wherever you go, which is an amazing experience. Well, I've had a great time touring both with Jake and Amber, I think because... what we do probably share is a sense of humour, and, you know, so we've had many great laughs together, and they've also been fantastic, because even though we, you know, obviously speak the same language, Australians and Americans, that we do have quite significant cultural differences. And I think when I first, you know, came across to the States, I was saying to Amber and Jake, it's like being a newborn again. Suddenly mm-hmm. everything's got an intensity to it. Because you're experiencing it for the first time, which I think is great in terms of, you know, writing experience, because that's really what you want to be doing when you're writing for, you know, teenagers. When people come to those books, they want to be feeling like they're feeling, you know, first love.
Definitely.
For the first time.
Definitely. So and what about you, Amber?
Yeah, we've had a wonderful time really talking and meeting, and one of the things I love to do when I meet people is because most writers are avid readers, and I usually read about 20 books at a time, and so I love asking people, what are you passionate about right now? What are you loving reading? And I've gotten some great suggestions and books and authors I hadn't heard of, and so to just be able to share the love of books with booksellers and librarians and students is just exciting. And then for all of us, because we love books, to be able to hold and sign something that we wrote that is tangible now and available to the public is just this amazing, surreal feeling.
Mm. Well, we have 6 books to give away today. And when we come back from break, I'll talk about that and tell our listeners how we're going to handle that, because 6 is a lot to give away today. That's great. So since we're going to give them these books away, is there anything any of you want to add about your specific book before I move on to the next topic? We covered all that.
Well, I think we've covered. I think the thing that you don't necessarily get on the radio is how funny these books are. They all have their own sense of humor. The characters are very quirky, wonderful for adults and young adults as well. So they're good for just about everybody.
Mm. Right. We've all been told that you need to be a little bit wary of reading the books in public places, because sometimes you laugh out loud unexpectedly and people look at you strangely.
Yeah, and also some of the topics, which, you know, some parents may not like. I mean, it's out there. It's out there on television. It's out there on mainstream television. But some parents still may not like. Some of the topics covered are obviously sex, homosexuality, pornography, mental illness, drug abuse, alcoholism. And they don't go into great detail in all of this these topics. But these topics are mentioned throughout the book, of course, which is reality, right?
Right.
So
I think that's why the genre itself is growing, because kids are exposed to so many different things and they're interested in those experiences, and none of those topics are explored, you know, hugely and in great detail. I think parents should just you know, if they're concerned, they need to look at it first, absolutely, with anything.
Yeah, and they're mentioned in passing, and certainly conversations that would happen in every school playground. Is there any topic that any of you would not cover? Silence. No? So everything's good.
I think as long as it goes to the character and the story, there's nothing in any of our books that we've put in there for the shock value. It all has something specific to do with our character and the book itself. So,
And to add on to that, it's not so much the topic, but how you deal with the topic.
Right.
So, yeah, the context.
If you're putting in something for shock value and then celebrating it in some way that seems very highly irresponsible. It's very different than, you know, writing about it in a very real way and trying to portray some of the challenges and complexities that go along with it.
Mm.
Right. Yeah, and I think I remember hearing one author say that they would never write about animal cruelty, and I thought that was quite bizarre. I mean, you know, truthfully, I think you write about the human experience, and you try and write as authentically and honestly as you possibly can.
Mm. Very good. All right, well, let's take a break. And when we come back, I want to ask you if art, you know, that eternal debate about art imitating life, or is it the other way around?
Right.
So stay with us, please. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And we're having a roundtable discussion with the three authors from Random House on Teen Voices National Tour. And we'll be right back.
Do something different with your spare time. Give baby animals at Paws a fresh start. With the assistance of caring volunteers, Paws helps hundreds of orphaned and sick kittens and puppies each year. Join us and save lives. Become a Paws foster care volunteer. For more information, visit paws.org or 425-787-2500. Paws.org or 425-787-2500.
The Art of Constructive Living is alive and well on The Gary Mance Show, Tuesdays at noon. It's your personal power lunch with a variety of experts serving up fresh ideas to take you from where you are in life to where you want to be. Sit down to a banquet for your brain, and I'll pick up the check. Join me every Tuesday at noon for The Gary Mance Show, right here on Alternative Talk 1150 KKNW.
Commune with the Pop Oracle, Thursdays at 2 p.m. on the Radio 8 Ball Show. I'm Andras Jones, the host of the Radio 8 Ball Show, where we answer your questions by picking songs at random and interpreting them as the answers, like picking musical tarot cards. That's the Radio 8 Ball Show, Tuesdays from 2 to 3 p.m. on Alternative Talk, 1150 a.m.
Listen live at 1150kknw.com. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And today we're having a roundtable discussion with the authors from the National Teen Voices Author Tour. We're talking with local author Amber Kaiser. We're talking with Lisa Shanahan, who's normally lives in Australia. And we're talking with Jack Wisner from the great New York City. And I wanted to ask each of you what you think on this eternal debate. Does art reflect life, or does life reflect art? Jake, how about we start with you?
I think that you can go both ways on that. I mean, I think certainly as writers, much of what we write, or certainly much of what I write, is a reflection of my own life experiences, the experiences of my students, and that much of the art that we create is kind of a framed interpretation of experiences we've gone through. And I certainly have had the experience very often of students coming up to me since I've written the book and saying very much, my goodness, you know, what you wrote, that speaks so much to my own experiences.
Okay. And how about Amber?
Yeah. It's funny. It's an eternal debate because you can go both ways and there isn't a right answer to it. For me, I would say that art definitely imitates life, not necessarily my life, but any good writer is, as you know with your blog and everything that you do, you're aware of people and events and emotions and all of those things. Writers are just on sort of supercharged sensory awareness, and so I think it'd be very difficult to write a book without life affecting that. I don't think I could do that.
Yeah, I think that life definitely affects you. You have to live and get out there and experience things,
right,
to be able to write. But I also think we're influenced by what's written out there. Otherwise, why write it? Why paint it?
Right.
How about you, Lisa? What do you have to add to any of this?
Oh, well, I think it's definitely true that you can go both ways. And I certainly think that, you know, anything in the lived experience that we have is ripe to be transformed in terms of, you know, into art. I guess when you're writing about life, you're giving it a certain shape and a certain kind of order to it that maybe is not always clear in real life. So,
I want to talk about rejection, because that's something that anybody who...
It's such a great topic. Let's dive into it.
Anybody who works in the creative field has to get to learn to deal with rejection.
Right.
So I want to know what have been some of your worst experiences, but maybe that you've learned the most from, because I think we often learn the most from things that are the most painful or most difficult.
Yeah.
So, Lisa, why don't we start with you on that?
Okay. In Australia, my first book I wrote was a chapter book called Sweetie May, and I was very keen after that to write a sequel. And so I did, and I submitted it to my editor, and she sent me back this letter saying, you know, it was terrible. It was really, you know, not good. And then she listed two pages of why it was so bad. And I remember being horrified. I felt like I'd been stabbed in the heart. Mm. And for a while, of course, I was angry, and I was wishing that, you know, God might get involved in some good old-fashioned smiting on my behalf. And in the end, I thought to myself, I'm never going to write about those characters again. And a year later, I was on a train in Sydney, and I was stuck on this train for about 5 hours, and some ideas for these characters came, and I went away and I, you know, wrote a story which was entirely different from my first attempt at a sequel, and it went on to be accepted. And the thing that it taught me, I guess, was that sometimes no's are very good in your career as a writer, because, and sometimes they're just as important as all the yeses you're going to get, because sometimes they teach you some really important things. So, for example, it taught me that you shouldn't actually rush ideas in order to get a publishing credit. That sometimes ideas have to ripen in order for, you know, them to be workable as a story. And that sometimes, you know, out of a rejection, which is a very bitter and ashy sort of experience, something beautiful can come. And I am certainly grateful to that editor who said no to me, because I would have been horrified to have had that first attempt at a sequel out there when I could have written such a much better book.
Yeah, so. Well said, well said. Amber, how about you?
Yes, you know, we were talking with some students about rejection, and any writer that's been in the business for very long knows the difference between a good rejection letter and a bad rejection letter. And for me, I think the early ones were the hardest because I was very idealistic and not didn't know the business as well as I learned it. And so, you know, you always hope when you send it off that it's going to be, you know, the first book, the manuscript that you write is going to be the one that gets you the best agent and the best deal and the movie deal and, you know, all of that. And so those first were very difficult for me. And then, you know, you pretty much get over it if you want to be published. You just, it's such a subjective world that's what you do, and you file them and move on.
Yeah, suck it up.
Yeah, exactly.
And Jake, how about you?
I mean, it really took me until I was an adult to even be willing to face up to that. I remember in high school I wrote a lot, and I never submitted anything to the literary magazine for that one reason, that I just couldn't bear the thought of having my piece rejected. When I finally, as an adult, wrote my first book, it got very, very positive notice at first, and a publisher said he was very interested, and me being as naive as I was, immediately went into my school and said my first book is being published, only to learn later through a series of things that, of course, it was not being published, which taught me a little something about the business. And even when I got an agent on the basis of that book, she essentially said to me, I'd like to represent you, but not for this book. Write me something else.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And so did you write?
And so I did, which ultimately became this book, Spanking Shakespeare.
Spanking Shakespeare.
I wrote some of it, and she said, what you're doing now is much better. That's the one I want you to work on.
Oh, good. Well, see, that was good advice, so that was worth going through.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask each of you to read a little from your book throughout the rest of the show. I wonder, maybe, Jake, you could start with something from Spanking Shakespeare.
Sure, I would be happy to. So Shakespeare Shapiro is writing the memoir of his life, and his teacher asks all the students prior to the year over the summer to write a prologue to their memoir, which Shakespeare does not know that he is going to then share with the whole class when he comes in. So I'll just read to you a little bit from that.
Good.
He is writing here. He's talking about what it's like to have been named Shakespeare. Take a moment to consider the implications of a name like Shakespeare Shapiro. It's the first day of middle school. Everybody is trying hard not to look nervous and self-conscious and miserable. I have intense pains in my stomach and begin to wonder if it's possible to get an ulcer in sixth grade. Good morning, everyone, the teacher says. Please stay here when I call your name. Michael and Jennifer and David and Stephanie and all the others have their names, hear their names, and dutifully identify themselves. Shakespeare Shapiro, the teacher calls out. The class bursts into laughter. Here, I squeak. She looks up. What a fabulous name. I've never had a student named Shakespeare before. Everybody is staring at me and whispering. If the teacher doesn't call the next name soon, the situation will become critical. Already I can see some of the more ape-like boys sizing me up for an afternoon beating. I bet you're a wonderful writer, Shakespeare, she says kindly. I begin to wish for a large brick to fall on her head. She looks back down at her roster. Come on, I think. You can do it. Her head pops back up. Just read the next name, I blurt out. And so, less than 10 minutes into my middle school career, I'm already in trouble, and all because of my ridiculous name.
Very good. And how much of you, if any, is in your protagonist, is in your character, Shakespeare?
I mean, it's very interesting. I think that, for me, my characters tend to kind of be combinations of me and people I know, and it's usually just kind of the flavor. So I kind of tap into my own neuroses, I tap into the neuroses of people around me and sort of combine them in new ways. In terms of the name thing, my parents actually gave us fairly normal names. I've given my own daughters somewhat less normal names. And
like what?
Well, my older daughter is Leilani. And my younger daughter is Cecily. And I remember when our first daughter was born, we hadn't told anyone the names. And my mother, calling my mother from the hospital and her saying, so what did you name your daughter? And I told her, and there was just dead silence on the other end. And then after a few seconds, just, well, that's interesting. You know, the first thing. So, I pull on different things like that.
Very good. All right. How about we go next with Lisa?
Sure.
And tell us what the name of your book is again. So,
My book is called The Sweet, Terrible, Glorious Year I Truly Completely Lost It. And Gemma, one of the things that Gemma Stone, my main character who's 14, is very keen to know is, you know, how when will she know whether she's in love? And she has quite a lovely relationship with her mother, and she is able to talk, well with her mother. So she has this conversation with her mother in the evening about how she's going to know when she's in love. So I'll just start. How do you know when you're in love? I asked. Mum stood up and popped her cup in the sink. Oh, that's easy. I know a good test. You'll know you're in love when you meet someone, and despite his faults and flaws, you'll happily clean his shoe for him after he's trodden in dog poo. That's the test? I asked. Dog poo? That's the test you used on Dad? Your father had a lot of flaws, said Mum. He hocked up his phlegm in a way that made my skin crawl. He wasn't a good listener. He was tight with his money. His hair was oily, and he always seemed to have a speck of red capsicum caught in his front teeth. But one day we went for a walk, and he trod in a mountain of poo, and I couldn't clean it quickly enough. It was a delight, a pleasure. After that, I knew he was the one, and 26 years later, he's still the one, even though his flaws are the same, if not worse. She dipped her hands into her pockets and beamed at me. The moment that something like the dog poo happens to you and you don't care, you'll know you found the one. But what about the fireworks? The heart thudding and the legs trembling like jelly, I asked. They're important, said Mum, but they're not always the most reliable hallmarks of enduring true love. She patted my head. No, Jim, you can't go past the dog poo test.
So, of course, I have to ask now, have you found the one? And if so, did you do that test?
You know what, that is so funny. My editor asked me the same question and we're at dinner. And I have to say that I've definitely found the one, but I think truthfully, if I'm honest about my own character, he's probably going to be more likely the one to clean the dog poo off my shoe than I am to clean it off his.
That sounds like a way to go to me.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. And then, Amber, would you read some of your book to us?
Yes, certainly. It's One Butt Cheek at a Time, and this is the Butt Cheek Philosophy of Life. My parents always say, put one foot in front of the other. What is that? It's discriminatory, for one thing. Not everyone has feet, nor can everyone move their feet. But here's the epiphany that is my brilliance. We all have butts. Seriously, even people without legs and arms have butts, right? Okay, so survival isn't about putting a foot in front of your trunk and shuffling along. Nope. It's moving the butt cheeks and getting them into the pants of life. It's my philosophy of attacking life, or more accurately, surviving life's attacks on me. Has been since I was little, when my tush was an adorable twin set of dumplings, so forever and ever, aw, woman. I get up, find the pants for the day that fit my butt, and wiggle into them. One butt cheek at a time. One and then the other. Simple. Deceptively simple. Eventually, because some days it takes longer than others, I get both cheeks into the jeans, and life doesn't feel quite so overwhelming.
Very good. That's a good philosophy to go by. I'm going to remember that next time I'm hiking up a great big hill. So where did you come up with the idea for that, and the idea for the title?
It's interesting. I started writing adult romances and was working on a project and had this voice, teenage voice, that just critiqued them over my shoulder. And finally, I decided I needed to give her a few pages just to shut her up, and she's still going, and we're working on book three. When Gert started speaking, I knew she had the butt-cheek philosophy of life, and I knew that that was the title I was hoping to go with. So she came fully formed, as just like anyone would walk into a room.
Interesting. And I want to ask each of you, and you can go ahead and start with this, Amber, since you're on that vein already. But what is the actual writing process like for you? How do you select your characters? How do you have a, some writers have a very strict regime about the way they write. What's
right.
it like for you?
Well, it's interesting because we've had many conversations about this. I tend to write very differently than Lisa and Jake do. I plot. I have whiteboards all over my office, and I pre-write and plot and know essentially what the characters are doing, the big things. And then when I sit down, I usually try to write about 10 new pages each day. In my office, I get up, make a cup of tea, go down, and start working. And then I work on revisions and other things throughout the day. But I try to be very disciplined about it 5 days a week.
So you're writing full time now?
Yes, I am writing full time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you teach also? Did I read somewhere that you teach workshops?
Yeah, I volunteer and teach workshops. I'll actually be teaching a workshop with Langley Middle School, their Writers Club, on how to do a good reading. And then I'll be at the Whidbey Island Writers Conference in March 2008 discussing how to write a series.
Okay. So. Okay. So people can see you if they go there.
Absolutely.
Good. And Lisa, what? Tell us what it's like for you. What is the process like for you?
Well, a little different, I think, because when I was writing this particular novel, and I think each novel probably would be different, but for this particular novel, I had the voice of the character, and I was writing to discover what her story would be. So I didn't have a great idea at the very beginning, what was going to happen in this character's life. And I've heard people describe this, style of writing as you hop on a wild bucking horse and you ride it until it drops you off. And it certainly was a little bit like that, I think, because, often I would make wrong detours and have to backtrack and really think, is that consistent with the voice of my character and with their beliefs and things like that. So my next novel, I think, will be plotted out a little more. But I do quite like that writing to discover what you mean, because it makes the writing exciting most days.
A very organic kind of approach, it sounds like.
Yes. Well, and the other thing is I don't actually write full-time because I have three young boys, so I'm writing around, my children's routines and things like that as well. So
that's very admirable, I always think, when people write around kids and routines like that.
Yes, well, it does. I mean, sometimes it's fantastic because, you know, that they're often, you know, they often are, you know, aside from being just beautiful kids, they often give you some great ideas.
Yes, sure.
And, you know, but it does mean sometimes that things go a little more slowly.
Sure. And Jake, tell us what the writing process is like for you and how you came up with this character.
Yeah, I think my process is similar to Lisa's. I had this idea for a character, and I began just kind of writing a series of vignettes of his experiences, which became the memoir part of the book. And again, did not have a sense of the entire book plotted out, kind of had ideas for these experiences he might have had. And then kind of as that started to take shape, I kind of realized it wasn't a book. I needed some kind of a frame through which he would be writing these experiences. But very much for me, the process is having a general idea of a character, and then as I write, kind of the story and more of the character unfolds itself to me as I go. And also, teaching full-time and having two young children, it is difficult for me to write as consistently and as regularly as possible, so I tend to write in big chunks at certain times. For example, on school vacations, I will write for many, many hours every day, but then I may go several weeks with only being able to get in an hour here or there.
Mm. Do you find it an advantage being around kids? Do you get ideas as Lisa does?
I do. And also just in talking to kids every single day about what they're reading and what they like and conferencing with them around their books, certainly, you know, it helps me know when I'm writing something I very much can envision, is this something that my teenage readers would respond to or not? And in fact, with this book, there were pieces of it before the book came out that I shared with some of my students to get feedback from. So that is also very helpful.
Good, very good. All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, I'm going to ask each author to ask a question of their own and talk a little bit about the publishing world and what it takes to get your book published in the teen market today. And you're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Please stay with us.
Vicky was a kid, she liked to hang out in the graveyard. She did best rubbing, she learned she never had to press hard. When she was finished hanging out, she was all alone. She decided that she better check in at home. There was an awful row between her mom and dad. She said she hadn't done this, she hadn't done that. If she wanted to remain inside the family home, she'd have to toe the line, she'd have to give it a go. It didn't suit Vicky, she took her things and left.
Are your services receiving the attention you've earned and deserve? Is your business growing as quickly as you'd like it to? More importantly, is it as profitable as it could be? We know it's easy to get overlooked in the crowd. Let our marketing experts shine a spotlight on you and your business by delivering your strategic message to thousands of people in the Northwest region and thousands more via the internet. Learn how our expertise can help put your name out there and increase awareness of your business. Call Conversations Live today at 253-302-3286 or email info@conversationslive.net. That's 253-302-3286 or email info@conversationslive.net.
Speed dating is fast-paced, flirty fun in a safe, no-pressure environment. Gig Harbor Speed Dates is the South Sound's best social opportunity for busy single people. Check us out at gigharborspeeddates.com. Make friends, business contacts, or maybe even a love connection. Go to gigharborspeeddates.com.
Hi, this is Howard Bono. I'll be hosting a new show called The Money Thing with Howard Bono on Tuesday afternoons from 2 to 3. The show's designed for what I call working America, those of us that are trying to live the American dream but find ourselves getting squeezed financially every day. On the show, we're going to explore the underlying reasons why we're feeling the pinch and some strategies and tricks to help you to understand how money works and how the wealthy handle theirs. My vision is to create 1,000 millionaires, so tune into The Money Thing with Howard Bono on Tuesday afternoons from 2 to 3 here on Alternative Talk 1150.
You've seen her on Oprah, 48 Hours, and The Today Show. Now hear Dr. Jen Berman on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Tune in next Monday at noon for the A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids. That's coming up next week on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair here on Alternative Talk 1150.
Radio with no added hormones or preservatives. All natural. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And today we're having a roundtable discussion with National Teen Voices author tour members Amber Kaiser, Lisa Shanahan, and Jake Wisner. They're all debut novelists that Random House has put on the road here. And they're going out talking to schools and libraries and bookstores. And, you know, we have to say, you're going to be here in Seattle on October. I haven't caught up yet. On October 18th, I believe.
It's Wednesday, October 17th at the University Village Barnes & Noble at 7 p.m.
Okay, and we need to try and remember to give that out one more time before the end of the show today.
No worries.
And I also want to let our listeners know, if you would like a copy of one of these books, I have six books to give away. And so what I thought we'd do today, rather than opening the phone lines, is have you email me at info@conversationslive.net or call my voicemail at 800-495-7617. I'll give those out in just a minute. And I will go ahead and what I'd like you to do is, if you know a needy teenager, that would be really great for us to give those out to, you know, somebody whose parents maybe don't have the money to go buy books. That would be really great. So I will give them out to the first, the third, and the fifth caller or emailer. And again, you need to call 800-495-7617 or info@conversationslive.net. And I'll take care of that. And we'll announce that next week who those went to. So I asked each of you, since you're all traveling together, you know, getting to know one another quite well, if you had a specific question that you would like to ask the others. So Amber, you're going to kick off with this.
I'm going to kick off with it. My question for you guys is, what's one or two of your favorite young adult titles, books that you've read?
Okay, so I have to repeat that because they can't hear very well because of their location. So what is the title of one of their favorite books that they've read, teen books?
I will start with that. I absolutely love the young adult books of Robert Cormier. He's written classics like The Chocolate War and I Am the Cheese. And I also very, very, very much love, there was a trilogy that was written a number of years ago by Philip Pullman called His Dark Materials. The books were The Golden Compass, The Subtle Knife, and The Amber Spyglass. And those are some of my absolute favorite young adult novels.
And how about you, Lisa?
Well, I'm going to refer to some of Australian writers, which I know have been published in the States. And the one that I really loved that I read just before I came out was called One Whole and Perfect Day by Judith Clark. And the other novels that I really love are Stephen Herrick's verse novels, and one of those is called By the River. And they just, you know, made a really big impact on me because the writing is so intense and beautiful.
Mm. And so, Amber, what about you?
Yes, the author that I'm loving right now, her name is Laura Rosau, and her first book was What the Moon Saw, and her newest title is Red Glass. They're beautiful, wonderful, spiritual, but also they tackle immigration in many different ways, which is a big topic in the United States right now, of course, and they're just beautifully written, great stories, very compelling, and so currently she's my favorite.
Very good. You should say yourself is your favorite. Or at least one of your fellow tours. No. Okay, so Jake, do you have a question you'd like to ask?
What I'm wondering is, for each of you, what do you think is the single best piece of writing advice you have ever gotten? The best piece of advice you've ever gotten as a writer?
Okay, and I'll repeat that because Lisa can't hear you very well. So what is the single... Oh, the best piece of advice you've ever received as a writer?
Well, I think I think the thing that actually made a big impact on me was probably not so much advice, but actually reading and seeing what a writer was doing. And that would be Anne Tyler, and you know, reading some of her books, particularly Dinner at the Homesick Restaurant. I just really realised for the first time the level of detail that's required to really convince you know, a reader that a character is real and that a place gives a real authenticity. And I think Flannery O'Connor went on, I read some writing advice from her, and she said that unless you use at least one or two senses when you're writing, if you're using less than that, people won't believe it when they're reading. So I thought that was kind of, you know, back that up.
Okay, say that again, if you're using one or two.
If you're only using one or two of the senses, you know, so smell or sight.
Okay.
You actually need to use more than that if you are going to be convincing.
Okay, very good.
And for me, I would say to actually sit down and write, it's very easy to go to conferences and workshops and take classes and read books on writing. And the hard part is when you get to, you know, page 100 or 250 or whatever, and you just want to start something else, or you have to keep going and you have to write. If you want to be an Olympic athlete, you practice every day. If you want to be a concert pianist, you practice every day. If you want to be a published writer, you have to write every day.
Getting your butts in the seats.
Yeah.
So, Jake, what about you?
You know, I think that one thing that has made a huge difference for me was finally embracing that idea of writing what you know. I think that I spent a lot of my life kind of trying to make up these very fantastical storylines and things that were not rooted enough in my own experiences and my own knowledge, and that when I started to write more from my own experiences and my own knowledge base and the things that were more a part of my world, I think that made a huge difference in my writing.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? And it's amazing when you think, or if you talk with family members or you talk with friends, it's amazing how many little stories they can see in your life that maybe you can't see.
Right.
Okay, so Lisa, what is your question to the others?
Well, my question for the others is, how did they feel about the editorial process? Because I sometimes think, you know, teenagers, when they read books, they forget the fact that, you know, these books have been through quite a bit of editorial to reach the level, the stage that they're finally at. So how did they feel? How did Amber and Jake feel about being edited?
Okay, so Jake, I know you can't hear Lisa very well. How do you feel about the editorial process? Because most people don't realize how much books have been edited by the time they get to a bookshelf. What was the editing experience like for you?
Yeah. You know, I think it's a very individual thing, depending on the relationship that a writer has with his or her editor. For me, it was actually a really wonderful, positive experience. And really, the whole process was, it was kind of a negotiation and a conversation. When my editor bought my book, he wrote me many notes, but it was very much not a top-down thing saying, you have to make these kinds of changes. It was thoughts and suggestions and things for us to have a discussion about. And so I think that if a writer and an editor have a very strong relationship and the editor has bought your book, so they already have embraced your vision, you know, I think that if an editor has huge, huge issues with the content and the material and things, you know, that might be more difficult. I think that there's the potential, if you are paired with a good editor, for it to be a really wonderful process, because we're both working together to make it a better book.
Sure.
Although I do know that, you know, it differs from writer to writer.
Sure. And Amber, what was your editorial experience like?
You know, it's interesting. I was given very good advice early on, and I wish I could credit the author that said this, but there's a difference between the heart draft and the published draft. So when you finish a book and you think it's as good as you can get it, then you send it out. And you have to separate yourself from that product at that point, because publishing is a business. And so you give it to the editor or the copy editor, the art department, all of those people, that's their business. And so you have to have conversation. You have to work with them. And there's a certain level of trust that they know. They know what they're doing, that they're professionals. And so you sort of have to step back and release it from that emotional, this is my baby, and start thinking of it as this is a product that this company is producing. Mm-hmm. We all need to get it as good as it can be.
Right. And it's a work in process.
Right.
Lisa, what was it like for you?
Well, I had a great editorial experience because what I was amazed at was just how editors, that they almost seem to love your book as much as you do, and they often know as much about it as you do as well, and they can easily refer to the page and, you know, to a particular character's, you know, qualities in a way that makes you feel that they love them just as intensely. I have to say, although I really enjoyed the editing stage, I really can't stand the proofing stage where you're looking for, you know, typos and things like that, because I feel that's an intense responsibility. Mm. And I'm always scared that something's going to be, you know, going out, there'll be a mistake and it'll be my fault. And so that stage I always feel like is a little bit like going to the dentist.
Oh, yes. let's dispel the myth that it's easier to get published for the young adult market, because I know it's not. As Amber said, this is a business. Publishing is a business. And I've heard many people say when they've had their mystery rejected or their suspense rejected, oh, well, I'm just going to write for young kids. And it's not easier.
No, somehow there's this idea if you have a smaller word count, and in young adult we don't necessarily have a smaller word count anymore, that it's somehow easier, that picture books are easier. Well, you have to, Lisa can tell you this, you have to distill an idea down to the very bare essentials. It's almost more difficult. So it's not.
I agree. I mean, a lot of people feel that, a book for children is going to somehow be more manageable than a book for adults. And, you know, I sometimes think that's definitely not true. I mean, there are conventions and restraints about probably writing for children that, are there, really in the end, probably make it actually more difficult. So,
Do you have anything to add to that, Jake?
I would just say, if anything, you know, I've been at a number of readings and stuff with other young adult writers who say that sometimes they actually lose patience in adult books because they feel like adult writers have so much space to, go off on their own diversions, and they feel as young adult writers often that every single page has to count so much and that you'll lose a teenage reader if you kind of go off on some flight of fancy for 10 pages. So,
well, sure.
I think that there's definitely an art to writing a young adult novel in exactly the same way as there is to writing a great work of adult literature.
Mm. I'd like each of you to give out your website information to our listeners in case we run out of time. So why don't we go ahead and start with you, Jake. Give out your book title again and your web information.
Sure. My book is Spanking Shakespeare.
I want to ask you, do you think this is directed mostly at boys or not?
You know, that's very interesting. Originally I wrote it with that in mind because teenage boys are often a harder audience to capture than teenage girls.
Okay.
But what I'm finding is that a lot of teenage girls are really liking the book.
Yeah, I can see that they would.
For a number of reasons. I mean, one, it's a window into a teenage boy's mind.
Yeah.
And I think that humor is humor, and that, you know, people appreciate, you know, the kind of the honest humor that goes with what it is to be a teenager.
Right. And your website is, Jake?
My website is www.jakewisner.com.
Okay. One more time.
Yep. www.jakewisner, JakeWisner.com.
Okay. Thank you. And,
thank you.
Lisa?
My book is The Sweet, Terrible, Glorious Year I Truly Completely Lost It. And my website is www.lisashanahan.com.
And spell that out for us, please.
www.lisashanahan.com.
Great. Thank you. And Amber?
My book is called Gert Garibaldi's Rants and Raves, One Butt Cheek at a Time. My personal website is amberkizer.com, amberkizer.com. The book's website is onebuttcheek.com. And Gert also has her own MySpace account where she blogs in character and keeps it up to the minute, and that's myspace.com/Gert Garibaldi.
Okay, so we can go visit Gert too.
Yeah.
Well, I thank you so much all for joining us today, and I wish you the best of luck with the rest of your tour. And I want to remind our listeners today that you can see these three authors on the National Teen Voices Author Tour at Third Place Books, September 17th. I need somebody to please to tell me the time.
Actually, at the University Village Barnes & Noble at 7 p.m. on Wednesday, October 17th.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
Sure. And I want to leave you with a quote from John Dewey, who says, arriving at one point is the starting point to another. Thank you so much for joining us today. And please join us next Monday at noon for more Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
You've seen her on Oprah, 48 Hours, and The Today Show. Now hear Dr. Jen Berman on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Tune in next Monday at noon for the A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids. That's coming up next week on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair here on Alternative Talk 1150.